Blog Talk Radio.
No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because a player thinks I would never rock any diamond that was pink. But will you value my mind more than you value my mink? If not, then I value it, guaranteed to shrink, and generations to come are guaranteed to sink. So what's the point of civil rights for the race if you get no rights when your pockets don't have a big face? We don't want our kids in the paper chase. Our leaders must die, but someone must take their place. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream that we stop being pathetic and value our future character more than we do their credit. Cause getting a Discover card ain't that hard, but discovering your true self can't be charged. Think large, there's much more to life than the money. What's the point of being out of debt if you are a dummy? So let's teach our youth to value their life, cause the truth is I think they got more value for ice. I got a dream, dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, dream, and I don't have a care if I'm unpopular while I'm stuck in this nightmare. If you're looking for solutions, then one is right here. We'll have less prostitution and a whole lot of prayer. So this one goes out to each and every millionaire. Would you give up your fortune for a breath of fresh air? If not, then you'll see. Look, never learn to share, but I'll give them what they need because they shake their derriere. What would Malcolm say if he was here today? What would Mark say if he were here today? What would Pop say if he were up here today? What are we gonna say to all these kids today?
They need a dream,
dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream,
dream,
something like Dr. King. Let's show these kids that it ain't all about the bling. I got a dream,
dream,
something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream,
dream, something like Dr. King.
Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream. No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because the player thinks. I got a dream. No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because the player thinks. I got a dream. No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because the player thinks.
I got a dream.
No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop.
I got a dream today. Greetings, 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 and happy new year and happy end of the first quarter of this new year. This is Miss E on Heart Talk with Miss E, and I got a dream. I've got energy. I am hyped up. So that's not our usual intro into our show, but I have a special reason for playing that number. And I don't know about you, but if you did not pick up on some of that, you might be kind of like me, kind of old school, and your brain may not function as quickly to be able to catch all the lyrics. But we're going to hear more in tune. But my favorite line that says, no, I didn't say a drink. Don't let the party stop because a player can think. I have to work on my rapping skills. But anyway, again, Happy New Year. I haven't done a program all year long. The last program that we did was back in November for National Adoption Month. And, you know, as life gets busy and there's so many things that you want to embrace, or I won't say there's many things that I want to embrace, it's like sometimes I just have to slow my roll, as the young people say, and just stop and focus on what's here in the moment. And what's here in the moment for me right now is a young man that just warms my heart from the first day that I met him. And this book, that's all I can say, this book is what we're going to talk about tonight and his upcoming event here in the San Francisco Bay Area for Saturday, April 1st. And no, it ain't no joke. for Saturday, April 1st from 2 to 4 p.m. at Tommy T's. You will have the awesome opportunity to meet, hear, greet, and get an autographed book signed by the author of The Harvard Effect, Mr. Les Brown's baby boy, but I want to claim him myself, so I keep trying to figure out how I'm going to claim him, but all I know, he's one of my hearts, and this is none other than Mr. John Leslie Brown. Are you there, John Leslie? Hello? Ah, you know what? I didn't turn your microphone on. I guess that would help, because you probably can hear me now.
Okay, yes, I am here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. I'm just going to talk the whole show. You know I can, don't you?
Right.
All right.
We both
yes,
can. We both can. But it's such an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much for that great introduction. And it's such a privilege, a plum pleasing privilege to be here in the Bay Area and to have the opportunity to make a difference out here. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome, and you have been making a difference for quite some time. As a matter of fact, some people aren't aware that you came for our Foster Pride celebration probably about 6-7 years ago, and you spoke at our main event, you know, for the general community, but then you did workshops for our young and transitioning foster youth, which was a hit, and it was, you know, off the hook, and you introduced me to another young man that you'd made acquaintance with who I just brought into my family. And it was just an awesome experience. And I've been wanting to get you back, wanting to get you back. But there's so many things. I know, I think we're probably just going to have you on an internship here. So what I didn't do is go through the list of, you know, all of your accolades. Because I like, you know, people say, I can show you better than I can tell you.
Right.
You show people better than we can tell them. But I know that one of the works that you've been known for as being a speaker or young motivational speaker starting at the age of, was it 9 or 12?
Yes, 9. By the time I was 10 years old, I was traveling and speaking with my dad, and I started off very early.
Yeah,
and that's why I teach people that you should never ask a person what do they want to be when they grow up, because that implies that they have to wait until they're a grown-up to be who they really are. And so growing up in my household, I learned that your time is now. You don't have to wait to get started to pursue your dream or to maximize your purpose on this earth. And so I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing. It's one thing helping those who have more, but helping those who have so little be grateful for what they have and to start to build from there, that's what you're doing. When we came in there for that Foster Pride Week, you know, one of the exercises that I always say is, I say, I'm Les Brown's baby boy. And my dad, who was adopted, he says he's Mamie Brown's baby boy. But to have there in the foster, in the group where, you know, people are adopted, to take pride in their adoptive parents, to take pride in the relationships that they had, to see it from that fresh perspective, it was transformational for me. And I'm so grateful for all the work that you do and for carrying the torch to the next generation.
Thank you so, so much. And I shared with something with you before, and I'm not, earlier, when we spoke earlier today, and I was saying to you, I don't know if you realize that my journey is pretty much similar to your grandmother's. And I think in one of the chapters of something that I wrote, I said, I want to be a Miss Mamie Brown. And so for you to be doing what you're doing also gives me hope. Because not having biological children, you know, I hope that one day that the children of my sons that I adopted will look back and say, you know, Miss E was my grandma, and look at what I'm doing now. So it just, it encourages me so much. So this book, that's all I can say, is this book is, oh, my gosh. I tried to take some notes just to sort of give a description of what has intrigued me the most about this. One, you give a lot of historical insights. You give a lot of scientific insights. You give a lot of psychological insights. It's like all wrapped up in one. Then you tell stories. Then you tell your own personal experiences, and you wrap it up and you tie it into anything that we're going through as an individual and realizing and living our dreams. And that's why I think that intro was so appropriate. And I'll say this, too. I've been telling people, I said, between Bruno Mars and John Leslie, they got me acting like I'm not my age. Oh, because I've just been bumping that all week long. I'm just loving it. So I probably have to pull out another one so we can play towards the end. But one of the first things I wanted to ask you, where did the idea of Harvard Effect come from?
That's a great question. You know, I have been creating information products. I created my first one when I was 14. It was called Get Up. And that was my first time in the studio. And I really loved it. I was prepared and I found my passion there. So since then, I've created over 12 different audio programs and over 300 motivational hip hop songs. The song that you played today to start off the show, that's actually the first recording that I ever made. And I had the privilege of performing. Yes, that is my first song ever recorded ever in the world. And so here was my dream. I'm this motivational speaker, but I want to reach the youth. I want to reach the next generation in a way that they can hear it, because we have a lot of more kids. They know a lot more about Biggie and Tupac than they do Napoleon Hill and Jim Rowan or Les Brown and Tony Robbins. And so I wanted to pass their messages to this next generation. The only thing was I didn't know how. And how many of us, when we look to do something beyond our comfort zone, allow the lack of understanding of how to stand in their way? And I just remember wondering what it would sound like, what my first song would ever be. How many songs would I be able to create? If I could have just made three or four, I would have been totally happy. So fast forward to moving forward. You know, how would that affect my career when an industry is so negative, to try to go into it with something positive? How do these two markets of self-improvement and music and empowering young people, where do they intersect? Fortunately, almost 10 years later, I get an opportunity to speak at Harvard University. And, you know, they do a lot of due diligence. They have to go through a whole committee process before you get to approve to speak at a place like Harvard, and they learn everything about you. And one of the things that they put on the flyer, which was so inspiring, was motivational speaker and hip-hop artist. So for me to go into an environment like Harvard University, where more presidents and Nobel laureates have graduated than any other university in the world, the oldest university in our country, and to share my principles, I wanted to bring out my best message. And really, the Harvard Effect came from me looking at what I had learned in the past two decades of my career and being in personal growth and development, similar to what Napoleon Hill did when he released his book in 1937, Think and Grow Rich. Now, just think about it. If the definition of success hasn't changed in 80 years, then something's really wrong, okay?
Book
was released in 1937. And when he interviewed the most successful people in the world, he didn't interview any millennial billionaires or any women moguls or any minorities or anyone who was earning $2,500 an hour as a teenager. He didn't interview those people because in 1937, those people did not exist, okay? So now in 2017, I wanted to look at what is a real formula that I know can work. And the Harvard Effect, when I went to go speak at Harvard, the message was so impactful and empowering, I realized this doesn't just belong at Harvard University. This belongs at Crenshaw High. This belongs at Hope Academy. This belongs from Sacramento to the streets of Detroit, to make sure that no matter where you are, even if you don't go to an Ivy League school, you deserve to get the tools to create an Ivy League lifestyle.
Yes, 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 yes. And no matter what age, and as I stated in my write-up, I said, this is for the young at heart, for the young and the not as young. Not. And what's interesting for me is I just celebrated my 60th birthday this month, and my 25th year in business, and really at a sort of a – pardon me?
I say congratulations.
Okay.
Yay.
Thank you. And I'm thinking, like, I'm at a sort of a crossroads now in terms of what it is I'm doing and what I want to do. And so the whole thing is like, well, what is your legacy? What is going – how are you going to carry this out? And, just sort of feeling like I'm just sort of in the middle. And when I picked up this book and start reading what you're talking about, the dynasty, and it's like, oh, and the black script, what's the first one?
The black sky thinking, yes.
Yes.
The black
and
sky
thinking. And
it's
like, oh, my gosh. So it's like right on time for me to sort of reestablish or extend what it is that I feel like I've been doing all this time, because sometimes we get ready to say, okay, I'm done with this, but this is a lifelong thing. And one of the things your dad says, it's not time to retire, it's time to refire. So I just want you to know that you have refired me. Something I love about the fact, too, because see, when I met you, which has probably been about, 10, 11 years ago?
Yes.
You were doing the hip-hop, and I loved it even then, and it was like, oh, my gosh, check this out. Listen to this, because I love being able to reach young people and put it in the terms that they can actually embrace and to understand. And you commented on, the hip-hop industry being negative and just trying to break in there with a positive message. And knowing that, coming from, a family that has a little bit more conservative and wanted you to fit in, and you're trying to choose. But I love you talk a lot about the heart. I'm the heart lady, believing and following your heart. And so you followed your heart. But I love this. When you talk about Lila Steinberg, who was the mentor of Tupac, and performing in front of her, with her and in front of your dad, and she told your dad that Tupac was a diagnosis, but High Hopes, which is your stage name, can be the antidote. I love that because she saw how they both tied in together, and then at the point where your dad said you can do both. What would you say to young people who feel like, okay, I like doing this and I want to do this, and it seems like they're not really tied in together? What would you say to a young person who's sort of struggling direction to go when it seems like it's in opposition?
That's a great question. The first thing that I would say, as I deal with that myself, still going and developing, looking back, that your future is unlimited. And so, now, the key phrase in that is your future is unlimited. The biggest challenge that young people face right now is the craving for instant gratification. You see, right now, you might have a lot of things in your heart, and you might not be able to see how they can get done right now. However, the power of the Harvard effect, and this is not just about the university. This is about the innerversity, what's inside you that we can bring out the same way that, even Harvard dropouts go on to become billionaires. They go on to become trendsetters because of their mindset and what they teach. So the first thing that I would say is, before you look to accumulate things or before you look to accomplish all of the things that's in your heart, one of the things that has made the Harvard University great year after year, decade after decade, generation after generation, is this thing that we talked about in chapter 1 of the book called the Harvard Creed. And the thing is, every person needs a creed. I got a chance to study with the great Marva Collins, a fantastic educator out of Chicago. And the first thing that I learned there was the creed. She had her own creed. And in that creed, it said, you know, God is not some cosmic bellboy who comes at my beckon and call. If I am to achieve, it is up to me. You see, society will draw a circle that shuts me out, but my superior thoughts will draw me in. I was born to win if I do not spend too much time trying to fail. Well, that's part of the creed for Marva Collins that I learned in the fifth grade. In the fifth grade, and it's still to me from the time I was 12, 13, 14, and now here I am, 32 years old, and I still have it in my, as I check into, you know, my hotel, that God is not some cosmic bellboy who comes at my beckon and call. If you want to, you know, Johnny Coleman, she says, it works if you work it. And the principles in the Harvard effect, trust me on this, they work if you work it. And the first principle, the key focus is the 100-year plan. See, the H in the Harvard effect stands for 100-year plan. And this does not mean that you have to live to be over 100 years old to have it, because Bill Gates, who worked with my dad at the age of 64, he developed a 100-year plan for his company and for his family and for where they would be in technology 100 years from now. Why is that? It's because he knows that the meaning of his life will live beyond himself. The wealth that he's generated will need to be passed on. He's created more abundance than he could accumulate in one lifetime. And if it's good enough for the Gates family, if it's good enough for the Amazon family, if it's good enough for the Toyota family, if it's good enough for the Zuckerberg family, then it's good enough for the Polk family. It's good enough for the Brown family. It's good enough for your family and all of your listeners to start at the top. And I call it the trickle-up effect, where you start to master the secrets of those, the billionaires and future zillionaires, the ones that are giving back so much that they can't help but to be rich, in order not to just get yourself riches, but in order to enrich your life.
Indeed. And, you know, when you say 100 years, people say, well, I ain't going to live that long. And, you know, what is sad, you know, so many of our young people, especially our young men and young men of color, don't have a life expectancy that they even expect to live past a certain age. So to even think beyond a certain age and beyond our lifespan in terms of, you know, how is it going to affect our children and our children's children and generations beyond, it's like, wow. What is there to it? And I think that's it. We don't have a sense of purpose. We don't have a sense of impact. You know, what
and the long-term vision. And now think about all the people who have passed away at early ages. You know, Tupac Shakur, 27 years old. Look at Jimi Hendrix. All these people. Guess what? You know what they all have in common? You look at an Elvis. You look at a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who never reached the age of 40 or 50. He never celebrated his 60th birthday like you just did. Okay? Never. Neither did the King of Pop. All right? But guess what? 100 years from now, you will know their names. 100 years from now, they will still be talking about the I Have a Dream speech. 100 years from now, they will still be talking about Billie Jean's Not My Lover. 100 years from now, 100 years from now, they will still be talking about Mamie Brown, because of the foundation that my dad is laying, and because of the foundation that I'm going to continue laying from her inspiration. And the first professor who taught me about the Harvard effect was not Dr. Myra White, who I have the privilege of learning from, or some of my prestigious teachers at the University of Harvard, where I went from speaking at Harvard to then enrolling and learning and knowing what it's like to be in a classroom. But the first Harvard effect professor that I learned from was Mrs. Mamie Brown. And she was a servant-driven individual. Her dream was to have children. But the moment that she adopted those two kids, The moment that she actually became a mother, she moved out of the dream phase. And that's okay. What we've got to get these kids. We've got to give them the tools to bring their dreams to life. And part of it, like you're saying, it is not just to have a dream, not to be a continuous dreamer, or just to be satisfied with finding your purpose and fulfilling your destiny. The Harvard Effect is about the final stage of achievement, which is about dynasty. How do we make sure that the impact that you've made in this Bay Area ripples on to future generations on multiple continents? And it starts by starting small. If you would have told me that it would have taken me 10 years for us to come back to the Bay Area, for me to learn the business of music, for me to come back and to say 10 years later saying, you know what, now I'm ready. You see, I thought I was ready then, but I had never studied raising capital then. I didn't know about return on investment. I never took any marketing classes at that time. I thought that I was just but really I'm an artistpreneur. I thought that I was just an MC, but really I'm an author. I'm a businessman. And to the young people that have so much in their hearts, but they're trying to figure out how they have to do it, here's the number one solution that I think is so important. Here's the number one thing. You've got to develop a mantra. You've got to get a creed. You have to say at an early age that you're not going to be a person that puts off the best of your life. As you know, that most people die at the age of 25 and aren't buried until they're 65 because they try to save they put off their goals and desires. And if you realize that it's going to take longer than you can imagine, then you can prepare for long-term success while still having short-term victory. So I think that it will take, you know, it took me 2 years to achieve one of the biggest goals in my 100-year plan. Just 2 years. But if I wouldn't have been thinking that, you have to innovate outside of what's happening now in order to dominate tomorrow.
Say that again.
So the
Say that again.
Yes, you have to innovate beyond what's happening now in order to dominate tomorrow. You see, when a child, when a young person wants to start up in an industry, they see what's happening in their heart, but they cannot see what's happening in the marketplace. They can't see what their competitors are doing. They can't see all of the niche markets. I thought hip hop was the only industry that existed. Because I didn't know that as a whole, the music industry, you have multiple genres, not just being on the radio, but getting your music in films. I did not know that I would become an Emmy Award winner, not for my speeches, but for my music, because my music was on a television show, and I'm an Emmy Award winner today, and that wasn't even on my goal list 10 years ago.
Okay.
See? But because
you know,
I heard my dad
talk about it,
I learned that it was possible.
And I think the thing about it is that the more you do, the more you see. And it's like it's a journey, and you keep going because new roads, new ventures open up for you. And, of course, you know, for me, just scripturally, thinking back, it says he's able to do exceedingly abundantly and above what you can think or imagine. And I always say, well, he's going to do a lot because I have a pretty big imagination. But as things unfold as you go and you utilize every one of your talents, you're not limited to just one. And that's the thing that I love about it. You didn't have to choose. You just had to start with one. You know, like you say, you know, start. You don't have to be great to get started, but you got to get started to become great. And it unfolds for you. Your gifts make room for you. So that is just really exciting for me. And I know that there's a whole lot more. So now you've added author to it. And I was just telling you, I said, this is three books at least in one. And you were saying that as you were going, you didn't think you had the ability to do this.
No, the longest paper I wrote, I remember I wrote a paper because by the time I was in middle school and high school, I was already touring. So, and I graduated independent studies. So imagine, you know, your dad is on TV, you know, he's married to the great Gladys Knight, like you're on tour with them. So you're not in a regular traditional environment. The longest paper I wrote I remember it was on a Komodo dragon. Okay, it was like a 7-page paper. It was the longest thing I've ever wrote, but very many years ago. So I know words and I know how to talk, but I never sat down and just wrote out different things. Even my speeches, over 20 years of giving speeches, and I've never written a speech down because my dad trained us. If we had any notes, he would throw them away before the speech so that we wouldn't be dependent upon them. And so this was the first time where I really sat down, and I love the researching process. And I've read so many books that were powerful, and I read books that they just had little sprinklets of information here or there, you know, where you had to kind of synthesize and go through 3 or 4 chapters before you get a good nugget. I just always wanted my book to be special. And there's so many conflicting stories and reports about how to achieve success. I really wanted to come up with something that could stand the test of times, that something that in 3017 they would still be able to talk about. And that's why we got the concept of 22nd century goal setting. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'll say, I will be talking about it until my teeth fall out, and I'll still be crying about it. You can ask anyone that has spoken to me this week. Everything they said, I can lead it back to something that you stated in your book. And I don't read as much as I used to, but, you know, I'll read something and say, that was good. But when something gets a hook in me, it really just it goes on because you can always refer, and it's something that you can relate to. Two things. One, you talked about just following your heart. You didn't say it in so many words because I'm looking for the actual quote. But part of the creed and part of having the mantra was to get it. You talked about the neurological cardiology.
Cardio-neurology, yes.
Okay.
Yes, you see, that's such a powerful. So we also say, hey, there are these things, you know, sometimes your mind is telling you one thing and your heart is telling you another. But here's one thing. Hey, we know that the heart doesn't have a mouth. So what do you mean it's telling you something, right? What do we mean by that? And I remember early on, before I ever got into studio, I wrote this song called Follow Your Heart. And when I say I wrote it, I didn't write it down, but it was written on my heart. And I said, follow your heart, even if no one's behind you. Follow your heart, just let the spirit guide you. Follow your heart, I hope these words can remind you to follow your heart if you ever want to find you. You know, and I never knew about cardio neurology, where I found it strange when I'm a dad now, and my son Honor is just 3 years old. But when he was still in the womb, they judged to determine whether or not he was healthy based off of the heartbeat. Because when we are born, we start off as a heart. And so this is the wonder you're the heart lady, because you know in the essence you are not your name, you are not your job, you are not your career. You are your heart. And your heart is what brings and draws all those things to you. So there's actually a nervous system in your heart that's similar to the nervous system in your brain, and they call it the little brain of the heart. And there's a whole new scientific community called HeartMath, where I dove in and really I realized that that's a key in terms of moving forward. Exposing cardio neurology and recognizing that when your heart is telling you something, my heart was telling me that I could make a difference with my music. My heart was telling me that I could write a book that could really be relevant beyond my lifetime. This was just in my heart. Now my mind said, you can't write the book, Harvard and Fankel, you know, you can't do that. Like, why that book? Why that title? How could you talk about having a 100-year plan? Won't people think that that's crazy? Well, guess what? I went from talking about the Harvard Effect to living it. I went from writing, from speaking at Harvard, to actually studying lessons from modern presidential leadership in Harvard Hall, to be the first person, the first man in my family to graduate from college, not because I need to, but because I have the freedom to. That's something that stemmed out of this process. And there might be some listeners who have outrageous things in their heart. One of my friends, he got into an argument with Richard Branson because they were talking about how they were going to buy a rainforest. And my friend Scott Duffy said, hold on, man, you can't buy a rainforest. And Richard Branson looked at him like he was crazy and said, who are you to tell me no? And turns out they figured out a way to lease the rainforest in order to get it stopped from being chopped down. And they did a crowdfunding exercise and got people from all over to contribute their dollars. And they used something called OPM, other people's money, to lease the rainforest. Okay. And it's that type of black sky thinking, it's that type of outside the box mindset that will allow you to graduate towards new levels of achievement. And so the Harvard effect is not some type of fairy tale or some type of novel, and it's not going to tell you about the Victorian landscape in Cambridge or what it's like or how hard it is to get into some university. No, no. The Harvard effect is a graduation curriculum to allow each individual, no matter what age, no matter what disability, no matter what diagnosis, to be able to graduate towards new heights in their personal and professional lives, to go from higher learning to higher earning, and to go from higher earning to higher giving.
Yeah, and the giving is a real strong component. But before we move on to that, I want to go back to the acrostic Harvard. So you said the H is for the 100-year plan. What about the following letters? What is the A for?
Yes, the H is for 100-year plan. And as you know, a plan, that's the power. Now, let's not get held up in the time frame of the plan. The plan is a 100-year plan because you got to think about where industries are going. You got to think about emerging markets. But we can have a plan and still not execute the plan. You can have a plan and still be intimidated by the plan. My dad had a plan to be a speaker for 14 years, but he didn't show up for 14 years. And that's why he didn't start his career till he was 43. You know, because for years he had a plan, but he didn't do anything about it. And so that's the thing. The 100-year plan is not the end-all, cure-all. That's just the start. After you have that plan, even if the dream is big, even if the business is larger than your bank account, even if the school that you want to open is continents away from you, one of the things that you have to do after you form your 100-year plan, meaning that you want to build it so that it's sustainable. Imagine if Blockbuster would have had a 100-year plan. Maybe they would still have some market share today. You see, but imagine if all these companies that are no longer around, imagine if Kodak, if they could see where things were going, they wouldn't become dinosaurs in the industries that they used to dominate. But after that, you have to allow yourself to fall. And that's the key. The bigger you get, the less risks you take. And so you have to allow yourself to fall. That is the key thing. And in the book Harvard Effect, we teach you the difference between failure and failure.
I got a kick out of that one.
Yes,
and for time's sake, we're not going to tell people what the difference is. They got to get the book to read it or come and hear you on Saturday. So let's go through the other letters. What is the R for?
Well, yeah, we'll give them the first three. Okay, I'll give them the first three. Then they got to get the book or come online. But the first one, you got to understand. The H stands for 100-year plan. And in the book, we teach you how to create generational wealth. We teach you how to build something. Now, just imagine if towards the end of your day, someone came to you and said, excuse me, whose name should we put on this check? Because they're going to keep coming even when you're not around. Imagine what that feeling is like. There are some people who have to make those decisions. Okay, so but then you've got to allow yourself to be able, you can't be so stuck in your comfort zone that you don't try anything new, so that you have this concept where you like to mimic other people's success and wonder why you can't find your own. And then the R, which is very key, very important, and that's resource management. resource management. And that has a lot to do with young people that have they have a lot in their heart. There are resources in you, gifts, talents, and abilities. Just like there are natural resources on this earth, natural resources, the oil, the gas, all of these things that, that get to determine this economy that we have. There are some supernatural resources inside of all of us that are more valuable than the oils, that's more valuable than the diamonds, that's more valuable than these things that we see. Inside of each and every one of us, there's a reservoir of potential. And in order for us to harness that potential, in order for us to create something that Warren Buffett, the most successful investor in our nation's history, is what he calls a durable competitive advantage. You have to be a resource manager. We hear a lot of people that have mega success today and have bottom of the mill failure tomorrow. And you have to learn how to manage your resources properly so that the success that you have is sustainable. And that's the key in the Harvard effect. Not just temporary success, not just a temporary feel-good moment where you feel motivated today. We are working with people long-term in order to measure and track the results.
Yes, indeed. And with that management, when you talk about you know, the reservoir of durable competitive
advantage.
What was the last?
Yes.
Advantage.
The durable
and, you know,
competitive advantage.
My thing is that so many people, youth and adults, don't even realize how valuable they are. And, yes. and that's my whole thing about the village. You know, one of my friends and colleagues talks about to be able to work in the village, you have to be a treasure hunter. And when we can dig and pull out those resources that are lying dormant in our young people, you know, it's crucial because they don't even know their value. They don't even know their worth. You know, and as your son says, they need a dream. But first of all, they need to know who and whose they are. So that is just really, that's very special to me. Now, in the resource management, you also talk about relationship capital.
Yes.
Talk to me.
Yes. So there are three most valuable resources. It's not your money, but it's your mind, your time, and your relationships. And one of the things that I learned early on is that as I started to grow and attend these different business conferences, that there are people who the most successful companies, like say a company like Apple, well, they started off with $100 million raised before they ever made their first phone. They started off with so much money behind them that people raise capital to launch their businesses in order to have the support before they can actually turn a profit. But what if you don't have a millionaire as a father? What if you're not at some Ivy League where people are throwing dollars at your ideas? What do you do? Well, guess what? Everyone that you come encounter with, even if you don't know, even if you are unaware of it, you never know who you might meet. And so the concept of not just being limited and defined by what you have in the bank, by how much your business is worth, by how much you sold this day, but by looking at yourself as what we call a relationshippreneur and looking at each relationship that you encounter as if it were stock. Because there are some things in life that money can't buy, but relationships own. And there are some privileges, and I've seen this firsthand. There are some speakers right now, they have not spoken at Harvard, but because they have a relationship with me, they will. You see what I'm saying? There are some people, there are some opportunities that where they this would be impossible for your background. Maybe you don't have the credentials. Oh, maybe you're not a celebrity. Oh, maybe you have all these things against you. But guess what? If you have a relationship, that can make all of those other things null and void. And if you look at yourself as a relationshippreneur, and if you actually start to measure your relationship capital, and we're going to say the three ways and the three categories for the readers out there in terms of how.
But come on, you got to tell them. I just thought this is like, okay, got to give it,
Okay.
Somebody needs to get this.
Okay, so there are three types of relationships. There are three types of relationships. And so this is what I learned. So growing up, I said to my dad one time, and he said, man, you've got to say that to the audience. I said, when looking at your relationships, ask yourself, who can you count on and who should you count out? Okay, who can you count on and who should you count out? But then as I grew up and I realized the people that you can count on is very rare. So then I realized that there are three types of relationships. So you've got stakeholders, and those are the people that you can count on. You see, those are the people that are truly invested in you. Those are the heart ladies of this world. Those are the people that don't forget your mission, that will stick up for you even when nobody's around. Those are the people that you don't want to forget, the stakeholders. But then you've got shareholders, and those are the people that will only scratch your back if you scratch theirs. Those are the people that start off with the WIFM, what's in it for me? You see? Mm-hmm. And there's some people that could help you but don't, and you don't know why. It's because they are shareholders, and you're confusing them as stakeholders. They don't have any stake in you. They don't really profit if you win. They look at you as competition, and you need to get that out of your head and stop judging them, because they are not the stakeholders in your life. When you do meet a stakeholder, treat them accordingly. And so you've got stakeholders, shareholders, and then you know that we all have those placeholders. And those are the people that you need to count out. The placeholders, the people that are just holding a place, the people that are just holding their memory in your smartphone, but not really there for any productive reason. The people that are just holding a place in your life, and more importantly, that are holding you in the same place and preventing you from the growth that you deserve.
Yeah, and sometimes that can even be the people who you've been the closest to for most of your life. It can be family members. It can be sorority and fraternity siblings.
Yes.
That's a difficult one, and I think that's probably one of the things that gets in the way of most of us, and the confusion that comes from the disappointment and the shock when you're not clear with the role because your expectations of certain people, are not met. So your needs, wants, and expectations are not being met. And so you go through all this emotional turmoil because it's like, my gosh, I feel betrayed. I feel blindsided. But you haven't stopped to really look at what category and what role each person serves in your life.
Yes.
And that's
true.
That's a real big one.
Yes.
And Ashley, that's one that I'm needing to really work on, because being a person that's always trying to give and help someone and not get that back. And I remember saying something to someone. I said, but I thought that this is what we did that. I said, well, if that was the reason you did it, you shouldn't have done it. And it was like, whoa, I had to pick my face up off the floor, because I just assumed that it came from the heart. So we have to really look at and explore that. Wow.
Exactly. And one of the things my dad says is, don't make someone a priority who's made you an option.
Don't make
someone a priority who's made you an option. And sometimes we have to look back and really analyze our relationships and what they're doing to us, how we're showing up. And that's not a normal thing. But when you decide to commit to the Harvard effect, when you decide to deal with the best of success, when you decide that nothing's going to hold you back from graduating to that next level, then it's a necessity that we do a relationship inventory and really measure. You know, there's this thing called the Dunbar number that we talk about in the Harvard Effect.
Yeah.
A scientist did some research based off of the size of the neocortex part of the brain. The average human being can have up to 150 harmonious relationships at one time. But here's the question: how many of us don't even have 5 or 10 people, like stakeholders in our life, people that we can really count on that support us? And so if we have the capacity for 150 harmonious relationships and we only have 2 or 3 or 20, imagine all the relationship capital potential that we're missing out on. And that's the key to build up your relationship capital as if you were building up a stock portfolio. Because each relationship, see, those stocks, those are semblances of value. That's a symbol of value. But a relationship, that's real value. Those are the people that will separate you from legacy to dynasty. And let your listeners remember this. See, legacy is all about how you want to be remembered. But dynasty is the people, that's the impact that you had on the people who will make sure that you are never forgotten.
Ooh, I'm
come
loving
on now.
It. I'm loving
Don't
it.
Don't get me started. Let me repeat that for
that
just
again.
In case
the
they
legacy
didn't hear.
Is how you want to be remembered.
How you want to be remembered. Yes, yes, yes. But dynasty is about the people who will make sure that you will never be forgotten. It's not about you. It's not about you.
Mm.
You see, there are a lot of people that they thought their legacy was one thing, but it ended up another. Okay. In their head, it was one thing. And anybody and their mama can have a legacy. But that's the thought. Oh, this is how I want to remember. Remember this. But guess what? There are a few people, very few people. I'm watching Sesame Street with my son, and it says the Carnegie Foundation. You mean the same person that sent Napoleon Hill on that on that road to write Think and Grow Rich? He's paying for Sesame Street today?
Okay.
In 2017?
Okay.
Now, that's dynasty. That's dynasty. He's paying for Sesame Street today. And as you know, we go back on Carnegie. He started off picking cotton, making 10 to 15 cents an hour. And he went into an industry, the steel industry, where he knew nothing about steel, and invented this word, this new concept of entrepreneurship, and even redefining success. And that's what we're doing for this new generation. The Harvard Effect is the new definition of success. I see kids maintaining a 4.0 and being the captain of their football team. And when they score 3 touchdowns, they say hashtag Harvard Effect. So that's my goal, is to have the Harvard Effect redefine success so that we can create generational value.
Wow. Something else you talk about that I feel that is very important, because, you know, we talk about anger management and, you know, telling people to control their anger. But I love the idea of basically channeling and placing our anger, not displacing the anger, but channeling it into something to make an effect. And people always talk about me being so soft-hearted. And I said, but, you know, little do you know that the reason that I deal with it comes from a place of anger, from a very painful experience and years of watching, you know, kids falling between the cracks. And it's like, I can't watch this happen anymore. I've got to do something. So it's really anger that drives me. And you talk about that in the book. About the role that anger can play in our becoming successful in establishing our dynasty. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, yes. There are many different types of anger, as I learned. You know, psychologists have discovered there's different types of anger, but few of these types are constructive. And so some people choose violence, as you know, so some people choose yelling, all these different things. But there is a moment when a person has the choice not to act like it does not affect them, but it's kind of like when Frank Sinatra said, "The greatest revenge is massive success."
Okay.
How do you use those times when you are falling? Okay, and this has to do with allowing yourself to fall, because you better believe if you got a 100-year plan, if you got anything big that you want to achieve, I don't care if you got a 10-minute plan, you're going to fall, okay? You're going to have some things happen to you that make you angry. You're going to have some people talk to about you, and they're going to say things that are not true. You're going to be talking to yourself and saying things that are not true sometimes, just if you don't hear it from other people. You are going to fall, and you are going to get angry at yourself, and you sometimes you're not going to be able to control it. But how do you turn it into how do you allow that anger to get you to be more disciplined? How do you allow that anger to fuel you to be more focused? And I talk about it in the context of, you know, when you have these gravity moments, when you fall, when things happen that are unexpected, because falling is all about the power of gravity, you've got to allow that. You have a choice. You can allow it to break you, or you can allow it to turn you into a groundbreaker. You see? Yes. A lot of people, they're broken by their angerness. They're broken by their bitterness. They're broken because they want to place the blame on someone else. But when you take responsibility for your actions, for your attitude, for your mindset, when you take responsibilities for your mistakes and even your shortcomings, even your bad patterns, when you don't ignore them and you allow them to fuel you in your new direction, you can be a groundbreaking individual. And groundbreaking individuals, they don't just get stuck in anger. They learn the science of happiness because they're able to process their emotions. See, to get into Harvard University, you have to have a high IQ. But as you know, we have to have a high EQ to use the Harvard effect. And that's the emotional intelligence, the emotional quotient. Yeah. And in life, things will happen where you have to take the emotional strength away from that and say, you know what, this is how I'm going to deal with it, by allowing this anger to fuel me in new constructive directions instead of keeping me stuck in the same place. I'm a hate crime survivor.
Exactly.
I was attacked. I was driving down to the Bay, and I still don't have vision in my left eye. And I have one song where I say, 20 stitches in my head, and they still say I'm handsome. If you was better off dead, then you wouldn't be dancing, you know? So I've experienced this, but I knew after, you know, I was attacked and a bat hit my eye, and it was, I didn't understand why, but I knew that I did not know if I was going to live to see the next day. And the one thing that I thought was, I'm so happy that I got my music out. And the thing, after I survived, I realized that, you know what? I'm not going to try to press charges by trying to lock up more people. I'm going to make sure these people hear my music. I'm going to make sure they hear my speeches. I'm going to make sure that they read this book so that this doesn't happen to other people that look like me down the line. And so that's a passion of mine.
Wow. So I can't believe, can you believe that this hour is up?
I know.
I knew this would happen. I knew this would happen.
I did too.
But for
Sorry.
Those of you who are listening in, whether you're listening online or where you're listening via phone, and if you've called in, I will open up the lines for if you have any questions or comments that you would like to share with John Leslie. But I also want to remind you, and I will be posting on Facebook again, that the event where he will be speaking on Saturday, April 1st from 2 to 4 p.m. at Tommy T's Comedy Club is called, what is the name of the event? The Red, help me out, Red Glasses.
The Red Glasses Day Party. The Red Glasses Day
Red
Party.
Red Glasses Day Party. Okay. See, that's what I start feeling old. It's like, come on, baby, help me out. Tell us about the red glasses.
Okay, so here's the fascinating thing. So these glasses, they're not just red glasses. They're learning lenses, okay? And so When I toured in the Bay, I got a pleasure of performing at Yoshi's with my favorite hip-hop artist, KRS-One, and his daughter, Tyne Parker. She said, hey, when you're not wearing a red tie and speaking, when you're performing, you should wear red glasses. And I stopped and got these glasses. Next thing you know, everywhere I went, people wanted these glasses. And this is when I realized it. Because in order to get in their heads, you got to get on their heads. You see?
Ooh.
So now, in order to get in their heads, you got to get on their heads. So young people, no matter how old, they want these red glasses. So what I've done, I've learned, listen to the customer. So I've attached QR codes to these red glasses, and it's the only way to get access. And when you get these glasses, you get also all of my motivational material for the last 22 years, all of my research on success, over 300 songs, over 100 downloads in the first year. When you get these red glasses, you are unlocking the Brown family vault to motivation. And that's the thing. Everything that we learn, it comes through the eyes and the ears. And there's videos, audios, worksheets, so that we can begin the work. And when you see someone with these red glasses on there, you know that they're a high achiever. You know that they have high hopes. And you know that they are part of the Brown dynasty.
Now, what kind of code did you say?
A QR code.
What kind of code?
A quick response code. Yes, a QR code.
Get out of here.
A quick response, yes. And that gives me a chance to track it. So I'll be able to say, okay, Ms. Evelyn, she signed in from this city on this date, and she spent this much time listening to it. And so that allows us to measure and track the performance and the engagement.
Wow. Now that's new. Actually, when I was looking at one of the promos on there, I did see, you know, one part where your dad said these are special glasses. They have something in them, but, you know, sometimes I'm not sure if he's being serious or not.
It is. So these are branded glasses. You see, when I became a student at Harvard University this January, no one wanted my book or even my motivational speeches. You know what they wanted? They wanted the glasses. So what I realized is you got to give them what they want just to give them what they need. And
Okay. Now
on campus at Harvard, all these people are wearing the glasses, and when they swipe the QR code, we get to monitor and check them, and they're listening to the music and getting the motivational training through the glasses instead of through a traditional CD or like they used to do tapes. Now, that's why we're patenting the learning lenses. And that's just getting ready for the VR. The virtual reality. We're creating the largest library of virtual reality motivational content in partnership with the Harvard Innovation Labs. So there are a lot of exciting things that have come out of this one book project and just following the principles that are in the book. That's why I'm so excited. Thank you so much for reading it. Thank you so much for spreading the word and for having me on your show. I'm so happy that we could kick it off this year, and I appreciate you for promoting and having everyone come join us. We're going to be having a great time and really setting a new foundation for the future this Saturday in the Bay.
Indeed. And also, if you will give our listeners your website and the fact that this is also offered as an online course that I'm excited to get involved with, and I want to be, what do you call, the instructors that become an affiliate instructor. Yeah, I want to be off the hook. So give them your website.
Yes, it's harvardeffect.com, H-A-R-V-A-R-D, effect.com. So www.harvardeffect.com or john-lesliebrown.com. Either or will take you to the site. And we're doing a 10-year mentorship program using the principles in the book so that we can actually track and highlight. Just think about if you could be a part of the test group of Think and Grow Rich. If you're, you know, if you could be a part of that first people who got that book and went out and lived the principles, imagine all of the success success stories that have been gained just off of that one body of work. Live Your Dreams, my dad's latest book. I mean, all of these progress, we need to measure the results so that future generations mm-hmm. don't have to wonder whether what we're saying
exactly.
works or not.
Exactly. Rather than just somebody talking, so, you know, this is proven and there are facts
this is
there.
Proven.
And
this is factual.
Like said, it works if you work it. It works if you work it.
Yes.
And you just said that you actually are now a student.
Yes.
Not only were you a lecturer,
yes.
you are now a student. Get
yes,
out
after
of here.
16 years of being out of the classroom, I decided to go back and enroll in school. My first class was Lessons from Modern Presidential Leadership in Harvard Hall.
Mm.
And one of the naysayers, you see, you got to listen to the naysayers because sometimes they give you good advice. One of the naysayers said, oh, well, you can't write The Harvard Effect. That sounds like an alumni book. And I said, oh, really? Okay. Well, I guess I'll go become an alumni then.
Hello. Hello.
But see, there are some things that I learned from Mamie Brown that they don't teach at Harvard. And that is the thing. That is the grit. That is the moxie to actually get it done. So in between running two different businesses, working with my dad's company, launching my own book, being a dad, I'm also still developing myself and working on my mind, because how can I continue to coach others if I'm not constantly improving and upgrading every day myself? And imagine how much more I'm going to grow with the resources in that environment in Cambridge, where I left sunny LA, and because of not because of what's happening today, but because of the changes that will be happening in our economy and across the world over the next coming years, I want to have every advantage possible to make sure that my son has generational wealth. I want to make sure that he has the same privileges that I grew up with. And so that's mm-hmm. what the Harvard Effect is about, creating something sustainable and doing something today that allow you to answer the question, why will the world be different because you were born?
Yes, yes, yes. Ooh, I need to go calm down now. Somebody wrote on Facebook, Miss E sounds like an says Miss E sounds like an excited teenager. I am. I'm looking forward to growing more. I'm looking forward to being mentored and tutored by you as well. And I just want to thank you for just being who you are. You've always been, you know, just very spirited, very engaging, very respectful. And I loved you from day one. And I am just so proud of you. I am just so proud of you. And it's like, that is totally aside from who your daddy is, okay? if you were around, I would have had you still up under my arm anyway. It's like, come on.
Right.
You know, it's a hard thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. And I'm going to open up the lines as we start to close out. And I'm wondering also, is there another one of your songs? Because I was shocked to find out that this was your first. Now, I've heard your music, but why have I not just now hearing this song?
I'm not sure. There's so many. I got to reintroduce the catalog to you. So, were you going to play something from the playlist or something?
Yeah, I was going to pull off something off of YouTube and look for something while I'm seeing if anyone has anything that they want to share. So is there something that you would like to? Oh, I forgot to let people know also that you do have a YouTube channel. So
yep, I'm on YouTube. Well, there is a song there called Fearless.
Fearless. Okay. So I'll pull that up. But at the moment, I'm going to open the lines before we close out. And if anyone is on, if I can go back to the studio screen and give you an opportunity just to give a shout out or an amen or I hear you, brother, I need to hear more. The lines are open. So anyone that's listening via telephone, feel free to speak and say what's on your heart and on your mind while I look for Fearless. So don't be scared. So the lines are open. Would anyone have anything to share or just want to say thank you to John Leslie? Oh, I guess you know what? I have to turn the mics on, huh? Just like I did with you. Okay, I need an engineer. Okay, now, everything is open. I see lights blinking. Okay.
Auntie, can you hear me?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can, but you're going in and out. Are you on a speakerphone?
I'm off speaker now. Can you hear me?
Okay, I can. Welcome, and thank you for sharing. Did you have something, you know, or would you like to share where you're listening from, who you are, and would you like to comment on anything that's been stated during this past hour?
This is Princess from Oakland, California, and I too am very proud of John Leslie. I had a few opportunities to meet you at some of Auntie E's heart gatherings and Foster Pride Month, and I think that you're tracking the lessons and the mentoring and the motivational talks. I think that's really helpful, and I don't know a lot of programs that are doing that, like you said, over a 10-year time period. So, again, I'm really looking forward to seeing the results and more so the youth and even elders that are benefiting from having this mentorship and measured results. So keep up the great work.
Yay! Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your contribution.
Are you going to be able to come out Saturday?
It's my intention to. I'm trying to gather up some youth and get there to close the 10. So that's the goal.
Yay. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much. I really
appreciate it. Very impressed. My mind is just blown right now. Like, when did this happen? How did it happen? Like, not that I doubt it at all. I know it's all possible, but it's my first time hearing it. So I'm just really, really excited for you and all the contributions you'll continue to make up, Willen. Around your family and our community.
Yay, thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you, Princess. And I'm going to try to help you to get some young people here, too. Actually, I was hoping that before this I could have talked about maybe some little contest I could do to give someone, you know, a ticket to bring a young person. But we still have some time, and people who follow me on Facebook can do that, too. You know, Miss E wants to do an e-ticket.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, very much. Any of our other listeners, anyone else have something you'd like to share? No one there? Let me make sure I've got everybody on. Okay, don't be shy. Okay. Uh-oh, I think I just froze my computer. So, Fearless is the song. You want to tell us about this, John Leslie?
No. That's the beautiful thing about music is that it speaks for itself. I will.
Hello.
I love the quote at the beginning. Uh-oh, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Are you there?
I can hear you. Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay, yes. I just love at the quote at the beginning, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. So you can let it play. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody Saturday. I had a beautiful road trip out here, so I'm going to get some rest and make sure you spread the word because this is going to be just like Foster Pride Week. That was so special.
Oh.
I'll never forget that day. I'll never forget that moment. This is going to be very intimate and very powerful and a lot of fun. So please come check us out. The evolution of what we started many years ago, we're back 10 years later, and that's around how long it takes to start a movement.
Wow. Indeed. Well, thank you very much. And I realize I don't have this uploaded to the program, so I would have to play it through my speaker. And I got the right one. It says this is 10 minutes. So I'm just going to end on the song that we came in, because as I said, that's my, what do you call it?
That's
my groove.
Right. Don't say groove. Wait, I think it's jam.
I don't know. Jam? Okay, it's my jam.
And like, oh, yeah. I said, you know, my first one was family. Family,
right.
F-A-M-I-L.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, you might want to do something live. You want to close us out on something live before we end?
I figured that request might come, so I would love to do family, but I want to make sure that they hear the words, okay? And then you could go into the song if necessary, but it says, I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream. No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because a player thinks. I would never rock any diamond that was pink, but will you value my mind more than you value my mink? If not, then our value is guaranteed to shrink, and generations to come are guaranteed to sink. So what's the point of civil rights for the race if you get no rights if your pockets don't have a big face? We don't want our kids in a paper chase. All leaders must die, but someone must take their place. I want to make sure that you make sure to live your dreams. Thank you so much. This is Les Brown's baby boy, the Heart Ladies, Pride and Joy, reminding you to live your dreams. Thank you so much.
Indeed. Thank you so much, and we'll see you Saturday.
For my dream, I got a dream. No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because a player thinks. I would never rock any diamond that was pink, but will you value my mind more than you value my mink? If not, then our value is guaranteed to shrink, and generations to come are guaranteed to sink. So what's the point of civil rights for the race if you get no rights when your pockets don't have a big face? We don't want our kids in the paper chase. All leaders must die, but someone must take their place. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream. That we stop being pathetic and value our future character more than we do their credit. Cause getting a Discover card ain't that hard, but discovering your true self can't be charged. Think large, there's much more to life than the money. What's the point of being out of debt if you are a dummy? So let's teach our youth to value their life. Cause the truth is, I think they got more value for ICE. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream, something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream. And I don't have a care if I'm unpopular while we're stuck in this nightmare. If you're looking for solutions, then once it's right here, we'll have less prostitution and a whole lot of prayer. So this one goes out to each and every millionaire. Would you give up your fortune for a breath of fresh air? If not, then you'll see. Look, never learn to share, but I'll give them what they need because they shake their derriere. What would Malcolm say if he was here today? What would Mark say if he were here today? What would Pop say if he be up here today? What are we gonna say to all these kids today?
They need a dream.
Dream something like Dr. King. Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream.
Dream
something like Dr. King. Let's show these kids that it ain't all about the bling. I got a dream.
Dream something like Dr. King.
Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream.
Dream something like Dr. King.
Let's teach our children that money isn't everything. I got a dream. No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because the player thinks.
I got a dream.
No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because the player thinks.
I got a dream.
No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop just because the player thinks.
I got a dream.
No, I didn't say a drink, but don't let the party stop.